start it up, and I'm going to do the promo announcement after it, and we'll kick it right off. All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
For a long time, open source software and licensing and the implications of using open source software was still quite ambiguous, since none of the entities that produced open source enforced any of the licenses. People are realizing that just because software is free or open doesn't mean that it's free or open of actual licensing terms.
That was Dahlia Saper of the Saper Law Firm, who has lately been examining the legal implications of open source software in mixed license environments. Dahlia will be talking about this and other topics at the 2009 Flourish Conference taking place April 3rd and 4th at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Now in its third year, Flourish brings together open source enthusiasts from Chicagoland, the Midwest, and around the world to discuss the technical and philosophical aspects of open source. Flourish not only features engaging talks and discussions, but workshops on key open source technologies such as Drupal. For more information, go to flourishconf.com or follow FlourishConf on Twitter. You can also find our page on Facebook by searching Flourish Conference. We hope to see you there, April 3rd and 4th at UIC Student Center East, 750 South Halsted Street, Chicago. Flourish. In code, collaboration.
Whoops, kind of blew that one. That already happened.
The Southeast Linux Fest is a community event for anyone who wants to learn more about Linux and free and open source software. It is part educational conference and part social gathering. Like Linux itself, it is shared with the attendees of all skill levels to communicate tips and ideas and to benefit all who use Linux and free and open source software. The Linux Fest is a place to learn, to make new friends, to network with new business partners, and most importantly, to have fun. Come join us for the first annual Southeast Linux Fest on June 13th, 2009 in Clemson, South Carolina. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
Give me a T!
T!
L!
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 T!
T!
S!
S!
What's that spell?
Let's
get it. It's a little thing tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are licking bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see channels of Linux Tech.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sitting right there, goes the calendar, just about to begin.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Just want to remind everybody of the Calgary Open Source Systems Festival, which will be held Friday the 17th of April and Saturday the 18th of April at the Coast Plaza Hotel in Calgary. You can find out more information at cosfest.ca. That's COSSFEST.ca. It's put on by members of the Calgary Lug. And again, that's CosFest 2009, April 17th and 18th at the Coast Plaza Hotel in Calgary. Be there.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. We got another show tonight. This is episode 293. Today is Wednesday, April 8th.
Only 293.
Only 293. We got an amazing guest with us, the great Aaron Steiger from the KDE Project. Aaron, welcome to the show. It's good to talk to you again.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
Now, Aaron, I just want to say something here. You know, I've always respected KDE. I've never been a big fan of KDE. You know, it just was not my desktop of choice. And when I tried out KDE 4, it was nice, and I liked it, but it was a little...
Dan mutes himself while he's disparaging KDE. Shame on you, Dan. I like KDE.
The KDE news, we react to it.
He's already got a shining star embedded in his skull.
Oh, I love KDE 4.2. When I moved to Jaunty and I was having audio problems and stuff, and I switched around to different things, it was painful because I just wanted to get back to KDE 4.2. It was... You guys have been doing a fantastic job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think 4.2 was the release where, you know, we really brought a lot of the pieces that we've been working on together. And, yeah, that was what we were working towards. And you know, we hit that release, and it kind of set another bar for us. And now it's, you know, where do we go from here?
I'm loving 4.2.
Oh, yeah, it is fantastic. Now, it is a radical departure from what a lot of people are accustomed to when it comes to KDE.
Sure. In which ways do you think that is?
I mean, just the whole... I think a lot of the concept of it, I mean, it's I think, a hell of a lot faster. It's almost more like something like Fluxbox, but with full-featured environment, desktop environment surrounding it. And it has still a lot of the same capabilities as the 3.x series, but it's just, I don't know, you know, it seems a lot more lightweight and coming along to be a lot more flexible.
Yeah, and I mean, to be, you know, perfectly honest about a lot of that, some of it is, or a lot of it has been just, you know, pure hard work on, you know, doing things in a way that can actually work at a reasonable speed. And part of it as well is also using some of the, you know, the more modern graphics tricks as far as animations and whatnot to make things feel smoother as well. So these days when you're designing interfaces, there's a bit of both, right? I mean, there's raw speed, and you try and go for that. And then the other side of it is, you know, there are ways of making things feel faster because people have a certain way of perceiving things. And so if you can, even when there's, you know, things that maybe aren't the fastest in the world, you can actually use some of these techniques to make it feel faster, and then the user goes, okay, this actually feels good. So we've actually done both in KDE 4 and in Q4 as well. So it's not pure speed. It's partly that, but it's also a lot of attention to, you know, little details that just make things feel smoother and less jarring.
You know, when you guys came out with the first release of KDE 4, the 4.0 release, you caught a lot of flack. You know, a lot of people said it wasn't ready, you know, it lacked the maturity. It was a real big jump, and you guys took a lot of risks doing that. And I think finally with the 4.2 release, you're starting to see the fruition of all the hard work and that leap of faith that you guys took. And it's really starting to pay off now.
Yeah, I think so. I think people are starting to see that. And, I mean, when people were saying, you know, it's not ready, ready is a word that only makes sense in context, right? You know, if you pull out a bunch of rocks out of a mine and you take the ore out of the rocks, you go, okay, now it's ready. But ready for what? Ready to make into a product. And when you take that, you know, raw material and you make it into a product, then the people at the factory go, it's ready. And the marketing people go, well, it's ready for what? And then the marketing people add their, you know, the packaging and the advertisements and equip the sales force, and now it's ready for market. And I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people, when they looked at 4.0, They went, okay, this is not ready for me as an end user, which was something that we actually said, but got lost in translation, and we didn't, I guess, hammer it home loud enough. And then 4.1 came along, people said, okay, this is starting to gel, and then 4.2 came out, and people went, okay, yeah, this is ready for me as an end user. And I think everybody learned quite a bit about how to communicate to our user base as it exists right now. And I mean, part of it is that our user base has changed over the last several years, and both the people that are in our user base, but also our user base itself, the people that were there 5 or 6 years ago, have also matured in their expectations. So there's been adjustments needed all around. But I'm happy with where we've landed with 4.2. It is a stable release. It's solid. It's fast. We've got a lot of pretty interesting features in there, I think, and not just on the desktop shell, but right across the board in the applications as well.
Now, I mean, just looking at 4.2, the initial reaction to it is the design of it and the appearance is pretty different from the KDE 3X series, and people have you've ruffled a lot of feathers with that, apparently, because I hear the people who complain the loudest are always complaining that it's not the KDE that they're used to, and that must have taken a lot of that's a lot of risk you took there because of that.
Yeah, and I mean, the things that we changed, we didn't do in a lighthearted fashion. I mean, one of the things to remember is that the number one fans of the software are the people who make it, in this case. We really enjoy it, we love it, we live it, right? I mean, it's what we use day in, day out. Making changes isn't something that we kind of do as, you know, let's just make a change. And it's not, you know, a manager or a marketing person's coming and going, we need to change this, that, and forcing the hands of the developers. These changes come about through a lot of thought and pretty purposeful. And in the case of, I mean, you look at some of the things we've changed. One that came up recently was, if you don't have compositing, you can't have a translucent panel. And that change was the idea of that is that, you know, if there is a way to do something properly, you want to do it properly. And properly means that it's going to be the feature will be implemented in such a way that it's not going to result in bugs by design. In KDE 3, there was a lot of things that, you know, worked okay, but if you did the wrong thing or you put the wrong combination of configuration options together, you'd start to expose flaws. And people would report those bugs, and we'd say, well, there's no real way to fix them because that's kind of the limit of what we can do with the approach we've taken. And we didn't want to do that. We wanted to, you know, give a product that, you know, for the features that are there, when you use them, they work. And you know, there's no, you know, don't pay no mind to the man behind the curtain kind of thing, right? Where if you start stressing it in a certain way, you start to see the themes come apart. And so for something like panel translucency, there is a way to do that. It's called compositing. And if you don't have compositing, we can at best fake it, but you run into all kinds of edge cases where the faking looks silly. It looks amateurish. It isn't real. And even worse, it's less performant than doing it properly. So we could give everyone a feature that doesn't really work. It's okay, and for the people who are willing to compromise, that's okay. But it's less performant, and it causes more code for us to maintain. And personally, I'm very concerned that as time goes on, more and more people use compositing because the hardware supports it, and these will be just code paths just rot. So we made a decision 3-4 years ago now that for those kind of features, if there's a way of doing it properly, we were going to do them properly, and we would degrade back, gracefully in the case of, say, compositing. But when we did degrade, we weren't going to support features that were simply going to be hacked. And that is kind of a shock for a lot of people. Because, in Kicker and KDesktop and a lot of things in the desktop shell parts of KDE 3, it was totally cool to do hacks. And that was okay in one sense because we didn't have a choice back then. There was no compositing that worked in those days, not of the sort we have now. there was no real option of doing it. Qt wasn't as flexible with its painting. So there were just a lot of barriers that meant that we could either have no feature at all or a feature that had some issues. It wasn't terrifically efficient. It was, some hacks here and there, but that was our only option. And now that we have better options, we made that hard decision to go, well, let's try and limit the number of hacks. And when you do that, a couple of things happen, right, is you get a much cleaner code base, which means you can develop faster. It means that it will live longer because you're not going to end up in a place, in 10 years where a lot of free software projects, a lot of software projects in general, end up is you end up with this code base and you go, oh my God, how do we actually move this forward? It's such a mess now. You touch any piece of it and some other feature falls apart. And you also are able to do, things such as how can we increase performance? Let's optimize these things. And optimization and those kinds of more difficult tasks become more possible when the code base you start with is clean. Because things like optimization tend to make the code less pretty in places because you often have to take shortcuts and do nasty little tricks. So if you reserve the lack of cleanliness for things like performance, if you want to do something really fancy graphically, you reserve for those things, you can actually achieve those things. It comes at the expense of having what I like to refer to as half-assed features. That does kind of rankle some people who are used to it the old way. But I like to think of it that if we turned it around, if we turned time around in reverse, and we said, okay, here's, say for instance Plasma, and you've got all these features and all this beauty and what you can do with it, but I'll tell you what, I'll trade it for what Kicker is, but you can have pretend translucency in your panel. And I think if we reverse the timeline, I don't think many people would take that swap. It's one of those things where it's going to take time, I think, for people to kind of get used to this concept of now that we can do things right, we're going to do things right. There has to be a certain level of trust in the developers as well that we're trying to work towards something that is performant and flexible at the same time.
Speaking of desktop effects, it seems the compositing effects of Kwin, I think with this release, they are at least the equal of anything that Compass has. Some of the effects are really, really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a huge improvement in 4.2, which is actually pretty impressive because I remember when the first bit of code landed for Kwin effects, and that was in whenever Treesel was, 3 years ago now. Let me see if I can find out real quick while I'm talking. KD3 beta in Treesel, let's see. 10 days. What day was it? Oh, no, that was the first one. Anyways, I think it was about 3 years ago. And the first little bit of code landed into Kwin that didn't do anything. It just allowed somebody to eventually create a different rendering backend for Kwin. And then it was, quite some time later after that that, the first little bits of the OpenGL and stuff started to fall in place. And then we had 4.0, just over a year ago, and they were, kind of like a first cut of effects. And in that, between now and then, they've gone from that to being really slick, which I think is a real testament to the developers. And they haven't stopped either. I mean, 4.3, we've got a number of really nice things coming with the compositing, a number of new features, even more performance. And you'll also notice that if you're running it with Plasma, you'll actually get the same look and feel. So the alt-tab box and the little title bars that when you do things such as cover flow switching, there's a little title bar at the bottom that shows you what window is currently in the middle. Those all use Plasma theme elements as well now. So there's greater integration visually. So I'm really impressed with what the Kwin people have been able to accomplish in the last, essentially year and a half, 2 years.
Well, one of the things that you have moved on from in version KDE3 to KDE4 is you've replaced the sound system, the ARTS sound system, and you're using Phonon now. And
right.
That, I have not had any problems with Phonon. I have had problems with another sound system that floats around in it called Pulse Audio. And so what are your thoughts on Phonon and Pulse Audio and audio in Linux in general, and how the difficulties in implementing that in KDE?
Well, first, Pulse and Phonon reside in completely different layers in the stack. So what Phonon is, it's an API for application developers to use. And then Phonon in behind the scenes talks to whatever sound system and video system there is on the machine you're using. So whereas Pulse or GStreamer or any of these other, you know, DirectShow or QuickTime, depending on the platform, those actually do the media, right? They do the codecs, and they actually handle the output and all of those things. What Phonon does, it gives us a API for application developers that makes sense. And by that I mean most of the audio and video APIs on, especially on Linux, really require you to be somewhat in the know when it comes to multimedia. And we wanted to make it just dead simple to use media on Linux. Additionally, one of the reasons that we didn't see people implementing media in free software was you never knew when it was going to work where. So you may put all of your heart and mind into, you know, say, against arts. And then you find an operating system that disables arts by default, and all of a sudden all the media that you've put, you know, support you put in just doesn't work. So, you know, why bother, right? Same thing with any of the other media systems that are out there right now. So there was a huge distrust that was built up amongst developers in the media stacks because they changed so often, and because there was, every time they would change, there'd be years of kind of alpha, beta quality, and people would have problems. And so what applications started doing was, you know, and Amarok is a good example of this, where they'd write a backend for, GStreamer, and a backend for Zine, and a backend for, and they'd have a couple of different media backends, and then let the operating system vendor choose which backend to use. And they'd have a recommended one, but they, you know, would say, oh, if you want to use GStreamer, you can use the GStreamer backend. And Phonon just removes all those questions. Right, you write to Phonon, and it's a simple, easy-to-use API that anybody can really use. You don't have to be a multimedia genius, and it looks like all the other Qt and KDE APIs. For the user, that means that, you know, you can start to see media in more places, which is cool. For the developer, it's a matter of ease, but also a matter of trust, because they know that no matter what audio system is on the machine the person's using, be it Windows, Mac, any of the Linux flavors, etc., that all the time he's put into making that, you know, audio play or that video play, it's just going to work because it's going to use the native system. And on Linux, as things change, you know, then we don't have to rewrite our code all over the place either, which is what we learned with ARTS. If you write to a system, it's probably going to change at some point, and we have to rewrite everything, and that we just didn't want to do that again. And I remember when there was conversation about GStreamer, and people were going, well, GStreamer, you just write to GStreamer. It's the thing. And then Pulse Audio came along. And now Pulse Audio is what we should write everything to. And it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, so, yes, there you go. You know, things change. And we don't want to rewrite our application code constantly. We want to just work on it in one place, and that one place is Phonon. So it future-proofs our code as well. So for the user, we expect to have a much more solid and reliable experience across applications. You won't have some applications. I mean, in KDE3, we had some applications using Zine, some using GStreamer, some using ARTS, and those don't all play together very well all the time. So with Phonon, everyone just uses Phonon. Phonon uses whatever backend it's going to use, and everything just works together. And so for the end user, you get more features using media, and it tends to just work better. As far as Linux audio, it's one of those things that we tend to, I think, as a free software community, over-engineer, and we tend to be a little quick to jump the gun. I mean, just like when people shipped KDE 4.0 as, you know, the desktop for whatever distribution it was, that was, you know, we didn't want that to happen, and they did it anyways, and it had, you know, negative effects for everybody. No one won on that one. And I think the same thing has happened with Pulse Audio. It's just not ready yet, not for defaults anyways. And I say this simply because you just look, if you go search on Google for Pulse Audio and problem, you'll find amazing numbers of hits. And there was just an article the other day, I think on it was put on Linux Today and a couple of other places, that said how to turn off Pulse Audio in Ubuntu. And when you start seeing things like that, you know you've probably got something that's, you know, not quite there yet. It could very well be there one day and be the best thing ever since sliced bread, but I think for the user experience, everyone expects audio to just work. It's 2009. This should not be something that breaks on you randomly. It should simply work, and we were there at that point. Pulse Audio has created some difficulties for certain people, and unfortunately, it's people with a very popular chipset for audio. It's with a lot of somebodies that have been affected. So I'd like to see us be a little more conservative in what we ship by default on Linux. But for us in KDE, I mean, it's basically a situation of, you know, well, what does Phonon support and how does Phonon work right now? So I think we're in a fairly decent place. And it's allowing us to do things such as in 4.3, we're shipping with the Plasma Desktop Shell a video widget. So you can actually put video right on your desktop or in your panel or wherever else you wish. You can even just drag it from, you have a little video clip or a movie or whatever, you can drag it from your file manager or wherever it appears and drop it onto your desktop, and it'll ask you, do you want to make a video widget for you or a link to this file? And you go, oh, make a video widget, and you can just play it right from your desktop, which is, I think, a pretty neat thing. And it's extraordinarily small amount of code and effort on the Plasma side, because we actually just let Phonon do it all for us.
That's cool. It is frustrating at times to switch to so many different audio backends, from OSS to ALSA to Pulse, and have GStreamer and all that layered on top. But I dig Phonon. I never have a problem with any of the applications using it. It runs great. But it is cool. And to see the revamped Amarok, which is nice, and how well it plays through Phonon is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also really happy with where the Amarok people are going. I mean, they made, as well, a similarly hard set of decisions with where they wanted to take their interface as well as their back end, you know, their audio and video playing. And looking at the development, I mean, they released 2.0, and their development since then has just been going so fast, so quick, and there's been so many improvements since then. I think it really does show that they've made some good decisions there as well. The agility of the development there has been really, really impressive. I keep updating my SVN copy of Amarok every about once a week or so, and you know it changes visibly every time, and always for the better. You know, just it's starting to settle in into a really nice place.
What about the rest of like the KDE suite of applications? They seem, some of them are coming along really well, and some we haven't seen yet, like KOffice and everything. How's the progress coming with those?
Yeah, well, you're right that there are some applications that progress faster than others, and some that progress slower, or in some cases not at all. And that's kind of typical for free software, right? I mean, you'll have both communities that are better at sustaining themselves, as well as applications that are simply more interesting or are quicker to develop. And so, yeah, I mean, there is variance, and you're going to find that across any spectrum of applications. Applications that I'm really happy with and where it's going right now, Digicam, for instance, they released their KDE4 release, and it's actually working better for me than any of the KDE3 ones ever did. So I'm really happy about that, and they've done some very good work, I think. Applications like Arc for compression and whatnot, Gwenview, Dolphin, all of these have just really continued to improve, you know, month over month, let alone release over release. So those are going quite well, and we're starting to see them take advantage of things such as Marble for geolocation. You'll see that in Digicam, or in increased usage of metadata from Nepomuk in Dolphin. So we're starting to see them take advantage of these platforms or these frameworks as well. Things like KOffice, they're finally doing betas. They've actually done a number of betas now. And they're getting very, very close to release, which is good. The office suites are always hard because they're not extraordinarily sexy to work on. It's a pretty difficult topic, and I think that open office is good enough that people don't really feel it as a pain point, even though it's not quite good enough to be something that I think most people are you know, really, really happy about. It's just kind of in that good enough zone where it tends to, you know, stunt development of things like KOffice, because there's, you know, well, I can just use you know, OpenOffice. There's still a lot of I think, room left for improvement in the office suites in the free software world, in OpenOffice as well as KOffice. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those unfortunate areas, and I think it would take a real community effort to build a group of people that are, you know, willing and able to work on such things. It's possible. I mean, people work on database software and people work on, you know, hardware drivers in the free software world, and those things are, you know, harder than working on an office suite, or as hard as working on an office suite. So it's possible. I think it just needs some real community effort to get those going. Other than that, I look around at the KDE various little projects, project groups. You know, we've got the educational group and the games group and graphics and whatnot. They're all moving forward, you know, rather nicely. The network applications are moving ahead nicely as well. Capetta keeps getting more features, and KTorrent has been amazing for quite a while on KDE4 now. So, yeah, we're starting to see these things all kind of shape up. So. Those are the bright spots, and we've got, you know, I think for a large distributed free software project that tends to take on extraordinarily ambitious goals, we've got remarkably few slow points.
Yeah, I was psyched when I finally got a Digicam for KDE 4.2 working, and that's really it's one of my must-have and favorite applications, and that's great that they finally got that ported over.
Yeah, and they've got the, I really like how they've started to add some of the workflow for both raw images as well as the light table and those kinds of things that, you know, people who are actually into photography are a bit more power. And I think that's one of the nice things as well about having something like GwenView that is, you know, powerful, pretty powerful, but also very, very simple. It relieves Digicam from having to cater to the, I just want to look at my photos. Or my pictures use case, and it allows them to really focus on digital photo management without having to deal with users going, but it's too complicated now because I just want to, you know, view a collection. Because for those people, we now have a very good application in GwenView. So that approach of really looking at use cases and trying to match applications to use cases, even though they may differ and often will differ, is, I think, paying off as well.
Now, you've probably been asked this a lot in the past, but, and I'm not clear on it myself, but what was the impetus of switching to, or even creating Dolphin, as opposed to just using Conqueror as the default file browser?
So there was the main driving reason for that was quite simply born of watching people use Conqueror. And Conqueror is a really, really great tool. It has a lot of features, and it treats file management as a browsing experience, which is a really cool idea. The problem is that it's kind of like the difference between GwenView and Digicam, or the difference between, say, a steak knife and a Swiss Army knife. In both cases, you have two very different use cases. I mean, they both are the same kind of tool, right? GwenView, Digicam, photos. Great, okay, sure enough. Steak knife, Swiss Army knife, yeah, you're both trying to cut, you know, things. Fair enough. But you want a different kind of tool depending on what you're trying to do. And when it came to Conqueror, we were servicing very, very well the either file management is browsing or the power user file management very, very well, and I think we still do. But we were completely not giving any sort of real thrift to people who just wanted to do, you know, run-of-the-mill file management. And this, again, like I said, we'd sit and watch, you know, kind of rank and file normal average users that actually are KDE users. Now, you didn't pull out, you know, drooling Windows users and say, okay, put you in front of KDE. We actually took KDE users and watched them use Conqueror and just watched them go through. I mean, it was sometimes embarrassing the difficulties they go through. And it's like, oh, we could change that, but then that would make it less useful as a power user tool. So we eventually decided that instead of neutering Conqueror and making it, you know, something that wasn't all that great, we started looking around. We saw Dolphin, and we talked to Peter Penz, who was developing Dolphin. We said, would you be interested in working, you know, on this for KDE4? And he said, sure. And this had a couple of really nice side effects. Number one, the number of people working in our file manager was pretty small. David Farr probably being, you know, the person who was, you know, contributing more to that than most anyone else. Although we had some people working on K-Durlister and some of the behind-the-scenes guts. But, you know, we didn't have all that many people working on it. And so Peter, you know, represented a nice increase in the number of people working on it. But it also gave us, you know, a web browser, or sorry, a file manager that was specifically designed for the task of basic file management, not browsing your disk or, you know, I'm a power user, I want to do 18, you know, really cool things while I'm using my files. And what we found is that for people that want just that basic file management experience, Dolphin does a much, much better job for them, right? It does about as good a job for them as Conqueror does for the power users. And so in this way, we didn't have to compromise either way. We didn't have to take away the power users tool. We didn't have to take away the concept of browsing or file management as browsing. One of the things I think that was kind of confusing and unfortunate for people was at the same time we were doing this, we were also rewriting the file views. And this was happening regardless of Dolphin or not, because with Qt 4, when we moved to it, it gave us a new way of displaying things, big lists of things called model view. And so David Forrest started porting everything towards that, and it was a very large task. But the nice thing about it is that it's allowed us to do things in a way that is a lot more performant. It used to be before in KDE3 when you'd switch between different view types in Conqueror, you'd lose certain features. They would just disappear because each view actually embodied all of the file logic as well. So views were a lot harder to write. It was a lot easier to break them, and there was differences in how they worked between them just because of the feature differences. That went away, or has gone away with KDE4. And we've also been able to see huge performance improvements. You know, just yesterday or 2 days ago, I saw him commit a change that sped up one form of file operation by 6 times. And I've seen, you know, routinely in the last 6-7 months, you know, commits from him that, you know, say, oh, improved by 10 times, improved by, you know, 45 times, just massive improvements in handling. That had to happen anyways, but it was just a huge amount of work to get that done. And so I think a lot of people confused that work for, you know, Dolphin being introduced, and the two were actually separate. So I think Dolphin got a bit of a black eye at the beginning from some of our KDE3 users that it didn't really deserve because it wasn't Dolphin's fault. It was the fact that we were still working on our file views. And that's another thing that I think has really come to maturity in 4.2. I mean, the file views have all kinds of great things in them now, just what you'd expect from KDE3. And actually, just this past week, I think in KDE 4.3, the trunk version, it now can optionally show the thumbnails of the contents that are in folders, which is really quite nice. So you can actually, you know, peek inside your folder without actually opening it up. So it just continues to grow from there.
And one of the things I really like about Dolphin or Conqueror is that you can use them. Even if you wanted to use them outside of KDE4 or KDE in general, you can. And they don't take over your desktop or anything. They're not intrusive. They just run. And yep. That's sweet.
Yeah, and I mean, that was something that we did differently in KDE1. In KDE1, the file manager kind of managed the desktop as well. And, yeah, we discovered that was probably not the best way of doing things. And so in KDE2, we actually made that separation between Conqueror and the desktop. And we continue to that because, yeah, it just makes sense. People can run Dolphin wherever they want. They can run Conqueror wherever they want. They're not forced to choose from the user's perspective, what are two separate pieces of software, you know? So it's one of those, I think, when people make the decision to tie those two pieces together, the desktop and the file manager, it might make sense from a software architecture point of view, or architect's point of view, but it doesn't really make sense, I think, from the user's point of view. So, and it has allowed us as well in KD4 to, you know, look at the desktop as an individual component and go, well, what should the desktop actually do and how should it actually work, as opposed to, oh, look, it's a file manager view, which really has fairly limited potential, I think.
Now, am I correct in remembering that Apple kind of built Safari off of the underpinnings of Conqueror? Aren't they related in some way?
Yeah, so they use WebKit, which is a fork of KHTML. So that's what they use. WebKit actually has a lot of support now from a number of groups and individuals. You'll find ports for Qt. Actually, Qt 4 now ships with Qt WebKit. GDK has there's a GDK port of WebKit, and people work all in the same SVN for that. But yeah, Safari's engine and the engine that you'll actually find for web rendering and whatnot on things like the iPhone and whatnot is all WebKit, which was originally HTML from KDE.
Now, have you guys, now since WebKit forked off of KHTML, have you guys, are you switching towards following WebKit, or are you sticking with the original KHTML?
There's not right now anyways a global consensus on that. So there are places where we're using WebKit, and there's places where we're still using the HTML that's in KDE's SVN. And of course there's still people working on KHTML, and I expect that would continue no matter what. There's not a global consensus on that. And in part, it's, you know, waiting for Qt WebKit to mature to the proper place. In part, people just, you know, their software already uses KHTML, so continue using it. So I think there's a bit of inertia there as well. In Plasma, we use WebKit for rendering content onto the canvas because it actually allows us to render directly onto the canvas without first going through a widget that gets proxied onto the canvas. So we went that route. And for that, as well, it also allows us to host Apple's widgets that are written for or written with the assumption that they're going to be running on a WebKit renderer. So it gives us some bug compatibility as well, or sorry, feature compatibility, as the case may be, with Apple widgets. So it makes it a bit easier to run their widgets reliably in Plasma. So you'll see some people that are using WebKit. But the bulk of applications, including Conqueror, continue to use KHTML.
So you can use the Apple Apple widgets in KDE?
It depends on which ones. There are some that require native code support, which of course we can't do because we'd have to essentially have a virtual machine for, you know, or a re-implementation of the entire Mac API. Or the bits of it that they use. So those ones we don't support, but the ones that are written with HTML and JavaScript work, yes.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, we had support a... it. Yeah. Sorry?
Oh, no, go ahead, finish what you were saying.
I was going to say, we also support Enlightenment 17 content. So if you take EDGE files from Enlightenment 17, you can actually put them directly on Plasma now, and they just run like any other widget would, and you can rotate them and resize them and do the normal stuff, as well as Google Gadgets. Those also run natively now. So we're collecting quite a collection of widgets that we support natively directly on the Plasma canvas.
All right. Actually, I have two questions, one from the IRC and one that was emailed into us. So I think since we're over on the Plasma side of things now and the desktop, I want to ask a question about the desktop that was emailed into us. And the question is that by default, in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, there's the swirly gadget that lets you add widgets to the desktop or the panel, and there's a feature in there that allows you to zoom out. And
right.
when you click on that, you get an area that is about four times the size of the desktop space, and you can zoom out again, and it looks like it's eight times the size of a single workspace. And you can see different desktop backgrounds on there. And what is that function for? And what
sure. so
what does that actually do?
Okay. So the you only have so much space on your screen at once, right? I mean, that's kind of a physical limitation of the size of your monitors, or in the case of laptop, monitor and singular. One of the things that's become a greater reality in computing, end-user computing anyways, is that people aren't using their computers for a single function anymore. When computers were strapped to a desktop at work or to, you know, your desk at home, we didn't have the internet. People used their machines often for a very limited set of things. And in that case, it didn't really, you know, you didn't really feel hemmed in by the fact that I only have so much screen space. I can put all the icons I want and they're all kind of there, right? The five things I want to do. That's not how people use their computers anymore in general. I mean, there's obviously people that do, but more and more people use, you know, that one laptop for work, and then they come home and they do something, you know, not work-related on it, and this is just becoming a more and more common use case. So we stepped back and went, well, how do we fix that? How can we actually make it so that when you're doing different things, you can have different things in your desktop? We looked at the idea of, well, should we tie it to virtual desktops? And researching that, it turns out that not if some people use virtual desktops to separate different kinds of applications, and other people use the virtual desktops to group individual tasks. So, for instance, someone in the first category will put all their word processing documents on virtual desktop 2, and they'll keep all the web browsing on 1. Whereas someone from the other category will keep the web browser windows and their word processing documents for one project on desktop 1, and they'll have a spreadsheet and other web browsing windows that relate to that spreadsheet on desktop 2. So then went, oh, okay, so there's really two ways of working, and both kind of make sense. So we can't tie it to virtual desktops exclusively. Although in 4.2 you can actually tie it to virtual desktops, and in 4.3 we finally have a GUI for it. So you can go in and you can click per desktop layouts, and you'll get a different set of widgets on every single virtual desktop that you have, which I think is pretty cool. Beyond that, however, so we also wanted to allow people to choose how they worked. So the idea is that you can create any number of widget layouts. So you can have, you know, a folder from, you know, that is pertaining to project one on one, and you can have a different folder or multiple folder views open for the other project on a different containment or a different activity. And then you can have, you know, if it's your work activity, you might have, you know, your email widget showing, you know, what's coming in for email. If it's your home stuff, you might have your Twitter and whatnot. And so by being able to zoom out, you can actually get an overview of all the items that you have going, and you can switch between them. And you can go, okay, I'm not working on this project, I'm not working on that project, or I'm no longer at work, I'm at home. And so the idea is that you can actually have different layouts of things. And we've gotten a good amount of feedback from people that use it as such. If you don't care about that, you don't have to use it. You can just ignore the feature. But for people that actually do have this, you know, one computer, multiple tasks, it can prove to be really quite useful because they don't have to clutter up any one activity for their desktop, and they can also have, you know, multiple. They don't have to keep rearranging their desktop. And that was in part inspired by watching graphic designers use computers because I did some field research, you know, would sit there and watch graphic artists use, you know, their computer, and they would often have a bunch of folders, one for each project they're working on. And then they would, when they switch projects, they would pull the contents of one folder out onto the desktop, and then when they're done that project, they put it back into the folder, and they're doing all this manual management to keep their desktop focused on what they were doing at that time. So this is just a shortcut. You can just set it up the way you want for that project, set up a different one for a different task, and then switch between them. If you don't like zooming in and out, we also have a task or activity switcher, which lists all the activities that you have set up and in a very much like a task bar, and you can just click the buttons to switch between them.
Can you hotkey that Zoom function?
We don't have a global hotkey for it, and global hotkeys are really tricky because there's so few of them left these days. It would probably be a good idea to find one to actually to hotkey it to. So if you click on the desktop, there is a shortcut for it, but or if you hold down Control and use your scroll wheel, that also works to zoom in and out.
I didn't even know that. That's a shortcut right there.
Yeah.
Because I could find it interesting to use that, but it would get a little clunky for me to have to click on that option in the widget there and then click the zoom out function. But it seems to be, can be handy.
Yeah. You can also, and again, this is if you are actually clicked onto the desktop or have the desktop in focus, which right now Quinn doesn't allow us to do, but hopefully soon that will. You can Alt-Tab to it eventually. You can actually hit, I think it's Shift-Control-N and Shift-Control-P, and it will switch between your activities next and previous. So, another way of switching between your various activities. So zooming out isn't the only way. And for you, you might enjoy using the activity bar. And so you'll see them in a nice little list of buttons, and you go, I'm working on this one and that one and the other one, and be done with it. There's a few ways of doing it. The nice thing about the zooming is that it gives you an overview, which for a lot of people is a lot more natural. Unfortunately, the zooming happens in software, so there's a lot of software scaling, and on a lot of systems it's not extraordinarily performant. I'm hoping that as the OpenGL painting backend and Qt matures, we'll be able to just move to OpenGL, and that allows us to do a few things, such as doing a smooth scale out, which is a lot less jumpy than the current one. I actually wrote up a small patch that did smooth, in theory, zooming. So when you zoom out, you'd actually see your desktop go, into the back and zoom out, as opposed to just jump to it. The problem was that it was so amazingly slow. I got like 3 frames a second or something out of it. It looked horrible. But once we have a well-working OpenGL backend for Qt, then we'd be able to do the scaling in hardware, at which point it would be pretty darn fast, and then we can do some of those things with the zooming that'll make it feel just a lot more natural.
Yeah, back to the OpenGL stuff, I just love, the different ways to just switch through the stuff I use. And, I forget what the exact transition is called, but it's just, is it cover view? Is that the one where it'll shift into the front and it'll move, it's on its side and then the next one. I love switching through like that. And it's so beautifully done.
Yeah. And now it actually supports mouse interaction, which is my only complaint with it before, was I couldn't, I could see all my windows, but I couldn't click on one, the fifth one to bring it up. Right? I'd have to manually go tap, 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 tap to that one. But now you can do it, and you can go, oh, there's that window way piled in the back, and just click on it, and it comes to the front immediately. That is really cool.
Yeah, it is. Wow. That is something. Let me ask you the second question that is in our IRC before I lose it. The question from trolls in our IRC is, what is the state of KDE PIM, and how is Akinadi coming along?
Cool. Good question. We just had an Akinadi Hackfest in Berlin. I believe it was actually at the KDAB offices, if I'm not mistaken, just last week. So they're still doing 2 or 3 in-person hackfests a year, so one every about 4 months or so. And it's at the point where it's actually working rather, rather well. Akinadi is, that is. We have a new Plasma widget that won't be in 4.3. It still isn't quite at the point where we're happy with it, but it'll be in 4.4. And it's called, I'm not exactly sure why it's called this, but it's called Lion Mail, as in rawr, lion. And it uses Akinadi. And we have an Akinadi data engine as well that works quite nicely, so you can, get your last N emails or contacts or your calendar events. So those things are pretty. So it shows it does work rather nicely for what it's intended to do, which is make it easy to create new interfaces for these, you know, personal information management topics, which are, you know, contacts, calendaring, email, etc. So that's coming along pretty well. Unfortunately, Akinadi, I think, has taken longer than anybody really expected to get to this point and to mature. And so the kind of the downside to that is that the KDE PIM suite contact has really stayed back where it was as far as the internals from KDE 3. So contact, we've got these really pretty new headers to actually show your email so that it, you know, you can actually see a lot more information, do some direct manipulation in the headers, so you can mark things as to-dos or move them to your calendar or whatnot directly in the list of emails without having to open them up individually. And there's been some nice performance improvements as well for large folders. I have some folders on disk locally that are, oh goodness, 40 or 50,000 emails probably, which isn't gigantic, but it's not small either. And they open up rather nicely now. So there's been some improvement with contact, but I think that as Akinadi moves forward and is actually at the point where, you know, things are generally working between now and 4.4, the PIM team is looking at moving their emphasis towards contact finally, and reworking the UI as well as the guts of contact to fully take advantage of Akinadi. I'm currently using Akinadi as my backend in contact through. They've got some bridges that work fairly decently, but it'll be nice to actually see, you know, KMail and KOrganizer, et cetera, just purely Akinadi-based, as opposed to it being, you know, just one more kind of backend for contact, because that's really what Akinadi is supposed to do. So Akinadi progress coming along really, really nicely. The architecture is, I think, proving itself. Contact is not quite taking advantage of it yet.
Cool. Now, a couple, Chess Griffin from Linux Reality has jumped on, and I don't know if he was interested in asking any questions yet, Chess, but, and I don't know if he's even listening right now.
Hey, Dan, I'm here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
So, yeah, we can hear you just fine. So I just want to let you know, anytime you have a question or whatever, feel free to jump in. Now, the one person who I would love to have had on here today, because he was using KDE 4.2, was Dave Yates, and some of the questions that he had pulled up on his show, some of the issues that he had with KDE 4.2 was the difficulty in getting non-KDE applications like those that use GTK to be themed properly in Jaunty's version of KDE. What would your solution to that be? Is that an issue with the distribution and not providing the right theme sets and everything and configuring things properly, or is that still a problem with being able to get like a compatible theme across applications that use different desktop widget sets?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Dan. I mean, I noticed the same problem, not just Jaunty on Intrepid as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a general problem, and it's really because there are very, very few projects in free software that tend to look beyond their own borders. And this isn't just in the desktop. You'll find it in other places as well. But in general, because we are autonomous groups, we don't have, you know, a figurehead at the top. I mean, people look at Linus and go, oh, Linus Torvalds, he, you know, oversees Linux. He oversees the kernel, right? He doesn't really oversee anything else. He obviously, you know, he's not going to sit down and go, you know what, we should do Samba and Asterisk and blah, blah, blah. He doesn't have that kind of, you know, sway and pull and whatnot. I mean, he'll make suggestions, but he's not the Steve Jobs or the Bill Gates or whoever is really running things at Microsoft these days for the free software ecosystem. We don't have that person. And so this allows people to become very insular. And so you'll see a lot of insularity in free software projects. When it comes to the user experience, what that often means is that you'll get a project that, you know, works on their own little world, and they stare into their, you know, own navel and go, wow, we've got something great. And then you put their work next to somebody else's work, and you go, wow, it totally doesn't match up. And that's, it really does, it does impact the user experience, as, you know, you folks have noticed. In KDE, we try not to do that. You know, I mean, I'm sure we could find examples where we're not, you know, perfect and, you know, broadened our vision, you know, quite enough beyond our own borders. But in a lot of ways, we have. And this is one place we've actually done a lot of work. So there's, for instance, a Qt GDK style, which will actually use whatever your GDK style is for all of your Qt and KDE applications. So you can make everything look like your GDK style if you want, just by choosing the Qt GDK plugin. When it comes to running KDE and Qt applications on, say, GNOME, you'll notice that the button order switches in our dialogues to mimic the order of the GNOME HIG. Same thing on Mac and Windows as well. So we've really paid a lot of attention of how does our software work with other people's software? How can we make things look good when we're running in environments that, you know, aren't the KDE desktop shell? Because we do, you know, we fully realize that we've got the desktop shell, which is a core component of what we do, but, you know, people are going to run our software on Windows or on Mac or on GNOME or, you know, on Flexbox. And it should all kind of look at home. You won't find that same level of care or interest or effort pretty much anywhere else. So, unfortunately, when you do the reverse and you run a GDK app inside of KDE, you'll find that it doesn't look and work like the rest of the environment. You can, say, for instance, use the ClearLux style for KDE and then use the ClearLux style for GDK, and they mostly match up, or you can just go the full Monty and use, you know, the Qt GDK style, or just live with the fact that it looks a little bit different. I really do wish that there was more emphasis and more interest paid to how can we make things, you know, look and work similarly, but again, we don't have that person at the top that dictates, you know, thou shalt now all work together. And so because of that, there are some inefficiencies that remain. Personally, I'm really proud of what the KDE people have achieved in that regard, and the Qt, and the people working on Qt itself as far as, you know, working well with others. And I hope that inspires other products to do the same.
Well, let me ask you a question. Since we're on a... Oh, sorry, Chess, go ahead.
Well, sorry. I was just going to ask Aaron. I was actually lucky to go to the, you know, the KDE launch event at Google last year. It was really cool, and I just had a great time. I thought one of the neatest things that I saw was, I think it was Ben Reed who was showing KDE running on Windows, and I think he's also done some work that in Fink on OS 10. I'm just curious, what's the sort of the status of that right now? I know, you know, I don't know how much you're involved with that porting effort, but I always thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, so yeah, it was Ben Reed on Mac. I think we had Yaroslav showing on Windows. Yeah, so I'm actually not personally involved with the porting efforts, but I do kind of keep tabs on it just to, you know, try and keep the pulse of the project. I believe it was yesterday or a couple days ago, they just released new packages via Fink for KDE applications on Mac OS. The Windows stuff works pretty well at this point. The biggest issue that they have and the biggest challenge is packaging and making it easy for people on Windows to use it and to get it. Obviously, to get a KDE application, we share a lot of infrastructure, and so you have to, you know, download and these other pieces as well. So there's, you know, I mean, compared to your average Windows application, it's not a huge amount of code, but we don't have a native Windows MSI-based installer at this point. So for the Windows side, it's mostly an issue of, you know, annoyance of getting it installed. There is a fairly decent installer that you can run that pulls in all the dependencies and makes it all work for you, and you sit there and you know, wait for, you know, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, and, you know, it does its thing and installs all the basic stuff you need, and then the application installs. And then from that point forward, you can just install applications, and it's very quick. But, I mean, they're still working on the packaging delivery issues, and there are just a certain number of people that are working on the Windows and Mac group, and unfortunately, they're both fairly quiet groups, and I think it'd be great to see someone who uses the Windows and the Mac stuff to actually, you know, help them out with getting some visibility communicating to the public what they're doing, because the people who are involved just aren't communicators. They're really great developers. They really believe in what they're doing. They're very passionate about it, but they're not, you know, the kind of, they're not cheerleaders. So they could use that help as well to kind of get the word out. But, yeah, I mean, things are in, you know, working order at this point, which is pretty cool.
Now, I don't use Windows or Mac, so I'm just curious of how well KDE functions on those environments. And is it used as a replacement for the default shell, or is it just layered on top of the default environment? What is it, Cocoa and OS X and the crap that Windows has?
Right. So one of the things that we did in the lead up to 4 was we looked at all of the parts that were platform dependent that had, you know, assumptions about X11 in it. And we abstracted those out in our own libraries. So the window system classes that we have that allow developers to manage how their windows are, you know, well managed, those were very X11 specific. And so we took the X11 code out and put it into somewhere else, and there's a different back end for those for Windows and Mac and X11, and depending on which platform it's built for, the different platform code gets built. So there's a lot of effort in making, you know, the functionality that used to be X11 specific, and therefore it only work on, say, Xorg or what have you, actually be able to work on Windows and Mac. There are still some of those back-end stubs that need to be implemented for Windows and Mac, but fewer and fewer as time goes on. One of the big things we did was we took out the native KDE file dialog, and we made it replaceable at runtime. So on Windows, you can actually get the Windows file dialog. You can also make a registry setting, if I remember correctly, that will flip back to the KDE one if you like the KDE one better than the Windows one. And of course, you lose a little bit of system integration that way, but you get your KDE file dialog. But by default, it uses the native file dialogs on Windows, and I believe it, I hope so. Anyways, on Mac as well. So we've done a lot of work on platform integration. There's still, you know, little bits of work to be done here and there, but it already looks, you know, fairly seamless. As far as the widgets go, things look and behave as they should. On Mac, you get the menu bar at the top, and, you know, you get the Mac-style widgets, and same thing on Windows. So it's actually kind of a little bizarre to see some of our applications we're so used to seeing a certain way on Linux, and you fire them up on, you know, a Windows or a Mac machine, and it looks slightly, like, foreign, because you recognize the application kind of, sort of, but it also looks a little bit different. And so, which is kind of neat, I guess, but yeah. So we try and use the native facilities as much as possible, and where there aren't native facilities or we have some advanced functionality that our applications rely on, we provide that ourselves.
Interesting. So the purpose of those is not to replace the default environment with a KDE environment, but just layer on top.
Right. I mean, KDE has three areas of product, right? One is our development libraries, which work across all the platforms and deliver a huge amount of value on top of Qt. And you can also, you know, mix and match. So if you want just the hardware awareness in Solid, you can use just Solid. You don't have to take the entire glop of KDE libraries. Then we've got the desktop environment, or as we call it, the workspace. And that is, yeah, the desktop shell, which is, you know, the window management, control center. I mean, you don't need that on Windows. We actually integrate with the Windows control panel or control center, whatever it's called these days, on Windows. That application, we integrate with that directly. So you don't need those things. So that's all in our workspace. And then the third area of categories are applications, and those are also portable by and large. There's a couple that are X-specific, but by and large, all the applications run on all the platforms. So it's really just the workspace that is more X11 specific. And people have done successfully ported the Plasma workspace to Windows, and have run it as a Windows shell replacement. It's not, again, not absolutely perfect. There's some bits and pieces that are missing that you'd really want in a full desktop shell, but it generally works much better than I expected, to be honest, at first. But yeah, the desktop shell is not really a prime focus for us as far as, you know, having to have that on Windows and Mac, unlike our development platform and our applications, which are a prime development target for those other platforms.
All right, question from the... go ahead, Chess.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, ask that question first. I think I know what you're about to ask.
Oh, okay. We have a question from the RFC about QT, and what are your thoughts of Nokia moving QT to the LGPL, and is there any plans for KDE project moving to using GPL version 3 for any of the code?
Right. So, two questions, right? I'll take the KDE one first. It's a simple one. We are already GPL 3 compatible. There you go. We did the hard work for that a year and a half ago and managed to get all of our libraries appropriately licensed, which is LGPL version 2 or better. So you can use it with LGPL 2, GPL 2, basically anything that's compatible with LGPL 2, or you can elect at runtime to use it as the LGPL version 3 set of libraries. So we're covered there. For Qt, the switch between GPL and LGPL I think was pretty dramatic. There were certain people that were just like, oh, I don't want to use a toolkit that's, you know, GPL only. And it was one of those things where the licensing arguments were kind of like splitting hairs and not particularly useful for, you know, the community in general. But people kept bringing it up and kept harping on it, and it became just one more kind of sticking issue for people in the usage of Qt. And with Nokia purchasing Trolltech and then renaming it to Qt Software, obviously Nokia doesn't, you know, rely on the income from Qt. As one of the management at Nokia, you know, told me, you know, the income from Qt is a rounding error on the Nokia balance sheet. So it gave with the purchase, there was a whole new latitude and flexibility when your entire company and the future of the toolkit relies on being able to turn a reliable profit quarter after quarter after quarter. You're a lot more conservative in the decisions and choices you make. When it wasn't a life or death issue with, you know, okay, will this revenue stream go up or down, or, you know, what will, how this affect, it gave them the latitude to go, hey, let's just get rid of this issue. Let's take this issue off the table. Let's make it LGPL, and then, you know, these conversations can just stop. And so, I mean, if more than anything else, I think it's less of a technical issue, more of a kind of a political and let's just get the licensing out of the way kind of move. And I think it's quite, you know, it's been quite successful to date in terms of you know, us seeing more projects looking at Qt now and going, yeah, we could use that, you know, for our project because now it's LGPL. So I think it's so far been a success. We'll see, in a few years. But I think it was a good move on the part of Nokia.
Go ahead, Chess. Your turn, sir.
Okay. Aaron, I wanted to ask you one of the other large desktop environments in Linux, the GNOME project, released, I think just this past week, some plans for 3.0, version 3.0, which I think is actually going to be numbered 2.30 or something, But the GNOME platform, I've looked at some of the blog posts and looked at some of the public, you know, published comments on it, things like that, and it looks pretty interesting. I don't know if have you had a chance to read about what they're planning to do, and if so, what are your thoughts on it as compared to what, you know, KDE's been doing the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, obviously we keep up with what everyone is doing, right? I'm sure they do the same. I know they do the same with us. You know, we're all free software projects, so there's a certain amount of interest in what each other is doing. I mean, I've been following the GNOME Shell project as well as some of the other things, the GIMI, which has kind of morphed into Zeitgeist now. Zeitgeist actually merged back into what is it? It begins with an M, some other interesting, funny name. So it's kind of more back towards the GIMI code base or the post-GIMI code base. I've been following that before the, you know, before the official announcements that we're going to do, you know, GNOME 3 now. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we keep tabs, and I think that some of the things they're doing are pretty gutsy. You know, the GNOME shell, I think, is very smart that they're doing a lot of stuff in JavaScript, that they're right now at least, you know, saying you have to have OpenGL for this to work. I think is a very gutsy move. We know we decided to go a slightly different route, and that was to degrade gracefully so that we could support people that can't run OpenGL platforms successfully. I think that in 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. everything will be OpenGL. And so, you know, it's just kind of a what do you do in between now and then sort of question. I'm not too sure about the, you know, weld the desktop to the window manager thing, but, you know, it's just a different approach. It's a different design approach. As for, you know, what the features will be and how they're going to handle the release management and, yeah, the whole, you know, calling 2.3.0 or 2.3.2, depending how it goes, you know, GNOME 3, that's really, I think, something for their community to decide and answer. I mean, I'm not really in a good position to reflect upon that, right? I mean, if they make their users happy, great. Right. They made their users happy. And if their users aren't happy with it, then at least they have alternatives, right? That's the good news in life. But, yeah, I mean, I wish them success with it and hope they can get things going. I know that they've blogged quite a bit and communicated quite a bit about, you know, the challenges they've had in, you know, trying to chart a coherent direction for themselves. And I hope that with, you know, saying, hey, this is what we're going to do now, we're going to go in this direction, that they can start to solve some of those issues and you know, start moving in the direction that they would like to move in. So, I mean, we'll see. It's going to take them a bit longer to actually get the release together, obviously, but time will tell, and, you know, the proof will be in the pudding. And, and I mean, they are taking a very different approach to what we decided to do, right? So
it does seem like they've got a pretty accelerated schedule. I seem to recall they were planning on having some of this done by next year, and that seems awfully optimistic, but I don't know. Maybe they can do it. I thought it was interesting as compared to sort of looking back now at the evolution of KDE 4 and, you know, wondering what will happen and whether they'll encounter some of the same challenges that I'm sure you did. I'm sure it's going to be a little bit different, obviously, but it'll just be kind of interesting to see.
I think it'll be a lot different. I mean, on the one hand, we were given a toolkit that had jumped dramatically in its API and capabilities. Part of, you know, their world for GNOME 3 is trying to evolve GDK simultaneously. And that's a very different kind of interaction and interface between your toolkit and your platform. I don't know which one. Well, I have personal feelings of which one is perhaps better, but I'll let people decide that for themselves. As far as, say, the desktop shell, which is, of course, the part of KDE that I'm most directly involved with as far as development and design goes these days, I mean, their approach is, let's design a new, you know, desktop shell. And so they're, you know, doing GNOME shell. With Plasma, we really weren't trying to create, as our primary goal, a new traditional desktop shell, right? We started with, what would it be like, you know, if we were able to create a different primary user interface? Okay, if that's where we wanted to be, what kind of framework would we need to achieve that? And let's build that framework. So instead of starting with a desktop shell, we started with a component model. And, you know, and that has, you know, led us to, you know, all the little bits and nobbles that, you know, are behind the scenes of the Plasma desktop workspace. But the Plasma desktop workspace isn't the only or the inevitable conclusion. We've started working on a new interface design, you know, built right on top of Plasma, exactly the way the Plasma desktop shell is, but for netbooks. And we're taking a very different approach to the user interface there. And so in that way, I think it'll be it's a little difficult to try and draw, you know, direct comparisons because our design objectives are not the same and have not been the same. So, I mean, I'm really happy with the approach we've taken. It allows us to do things such as go, let's take what we've done, and now let's take a look at the netbook as a unique hardware platform with, you know, unique UI requirements and unique use cases, and let's put something together designed just for it. We don't have to start from scratch, and we don't have to try and somehow make it look like it belongs with the KDE, you know, desktop or laptop workspace. It'll just work together and look similar and just kind of fit. And I think that's one of the more promising aspects of what we're doing on the workspace shell side. But I mean, I don't really think that's part of the goal on the GNOME 3 side. I don't want to speak for them, of course, but I see them doing things, you know, such as the some of the clutter-based work on Moblin and whatnot. And they're just kind of leaning, seems more towards inventing user interfaces almost from the ground up, or else taking the existing desktop interface and kind of trying to squish it down to fit into the netbook, which is what we did, of course, with KDE3, and I just was never happy with that, with the results of that. It's either too much work to do it from the ground up, or else you get something that looks like a, you know, a stunted desktop.
KDE 4.2, some cool stuff. What do we have in store for 4.3?
Well, we've got 4.2 is really, we focused on the desktop shell side, we focused on kind of feature parity with KDE3. A lot of the applications kind of, you know, focused on, you know, stability. In 4.3, we're seeing it's really turning into sort of a polishing release. On the desktop shell side, we've got more desktop effects, a lot smoother in a lot of ways, better visual integration between the different components. So, like I mentioned earlier, the window manager and the desktop shell all kind of blend together. Performance improvements, again, across the board are really quite nice and quite noticeable. We have a new desktop theme called Air, which moves away from the darker colors of the Oxygen and towards a lighter set of colors. I think it kind of goes a little bit better with the Oxygen widget theme as well. So that's on the desktop shell. We've got a huge number of new widgets and that you can play with, and we've also got a bunch of new wallpapers, even that dynamic one. So you can actually put the desktop globe in your background, the marble one, and it becomes your wallpaper, and you can spin it around, and it floats behind all your widgets. And we have one that's kind of useless but funny. It's called Virus, and it eats your wallpaper, which is kind of cute. So we've just continued to polish the traditional desktop shell, added a number of new widgets for people to experiment with and enjoy and play with. We have the taskbar that has all, you know, your windows. You can now manually move things around and group them, and it works really, really nicely at this point. Outside of the desktop shell, you'll see even more integration with Nipomuk, the metadata system in Dolphin. We have the tooltips that are back in the file management. So if you hover over a file, you get an enlarged preview and some metadata about it. As you hover over it, you'll find the in-folder previews and just a lot of really nice features such as that in file management, as well as a lot of speed-ups in the file management. And then again, it's you know, you look at the applications, and we're seeing everything from, you know, Digicam and Amarok, which aren't part of the core KDE releases, but are definitely part of the KDE family. They're making some really nice releases right now. They're going to coincide with the 4.3 series as well. We've seen, you know, continued improvements in pretty much right across the board from the games. There's a few new games, a lot of new artwork for the games. The graphic suite, you know, with Gwenview, and again, things like Copetta just continue to improve and get better. So I think that the leap between 4.1 and 4.2 was extraordinarily, like, you just went, oh my god, this is a huge, massive difference. And between 4.2 and 4.3 is a lot more, okay, we've added, it's a lot more evolutionary, we've added a lot of features and really polished things up and worked on the default presentation of a lot of items. Something we have that's really cool in 4.3 is Policy Kit, and there's also optional Package Kit integration, which allows us to actually integrate things properly with the operating system. So that administrator mode, for instance, in system settings is gone. We didn't want to run the full GUI as as a privileged administrator, there's just too many potential security holes. And PolicyKit is a way of allowing access to things such as setting the time on your computer without necessarily requiring a root password or being able to require a root password. And PackageKit is a distribution-neutral interface to underlying packaging systems. So we've got those in 4.3. We have a new network manager applet that'll be coming with 4.3. We have support for WCD, which is a network manager alternative. In 4.3, we have new Bluetooth support in 4.3, so we've got a lot of that stuff that's coming along as well. The operating system level integration is really starting to kick up. In the underlying libraries, it's mostly been about performance and polish and just getting those things to work even better. We're working on the notification system so that the notifications across all the free software that's out there actually works consistently. So if you run a GDK or GNOME app application in KDE, when it pops up, its notification will actually appear in the Plasma notification area, and vice versa. If you run a KDE app in a GNOME environment, it would pop up in there on-screen display for notifications. So we're working on that right now as well. So there's a lot of kind of under-the-hood stuff that's happening to just kind of improve the user experience in ways that may not be immediately visible in the way there was a lot of visible changes in 4.1 to 4.2, but the it would just smooth out the user experience. And that said, with the new desktop theme and some of the nice little touches, such as if when you transition between wallpapers, they actually blend one into the other very smoothly, and some of those visual things, I think that people also see a visual improvement from release to release that's more than what we were used to in, say, KDE3, where we kept pretty much the same widget style and theming. There's some noticeable visual improvements as well. It's really hard to sum up a project as big as KDE in 5 minutes. Yeah.
Question, though. You had called it Copeta. Is that how it should be pronounced? It's not Copete?
In theory, you pronounce it however you want. But yeah, Copeta is how the original developer who named it is supposed to be called, apparently.
Were they replacing Copeta?
No, they're not replacing it. There's a framework called Decibel that's actually part of the Telepathy larger project, which is all about presence. And presence takes into part of it the instant messaging. And so there's work going on to move all of the messaging and presence in KDE4 over to this Decibel framework, and that's still a work in progress. So Copeta will still be there as the full UI to instant messaging, but eventually at some point in the background it'll actually be using Decibel itself. It's very much like the difference between Contact and Akinati.
Oh, okay. Is there a note-taking application similar to Tomboy for Kate that KDE has out?
There's, depending on exactly what kind of note-taking you want to do, we have the fairly simple K-Notes, which allows you to do sticky notes. We have sticky notes as well on directly on your desktop. But there's KJOTS, which is a very nice rich text editing. You know, you have a tree of notes on the left, and you get to, type in your text on the right, and you can have nested books and pages and drag things around and export to HTML and print and whatnot. But it's meant to be a fairly simple, straightforward note taker. It does have things like bullet lists and whatnot. And they're actually working on integrating KJOTS with Akinati at the moment as well, so that'll join that universe of information. One step up from that is Basket, and right now Basket only has a KDE3 release, although they are working on it quite far ahead on the KDE4 port as well, and Basket is just a balls-to-the-wall, straight-out, do-anything-you-want-with-it note-taking application that's very impressive. So it depends on exactly what you want to do and how far you want to take it. I like KJOTS myself, and that's not just because I worked on it back in the day. In fact, the reason why I worked on it is because it was an application I used, and then it went maintainerless, and I was like, oh, no, I have to fix things up. So I ended up working that. But in the last couple of years, it's been other people that have been taking it to new heights. And so KJOTS is really good, at least for what I do and what I need. I do know people that really engage in their note taking a lot more than I do, and I know a lot of them use Basket.
Is there any application that you see would be beneficial to have as like a KDE flair to it, or a style that is not currently in the KDE suite of applications?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's quite a few. Is your question, is there an application that isn't in KDE that I think should be, or are there applications?
You would like to see be produced.
That's actually getting to be a smaller and smaller number. It used to be my number one on that list was nonlinear video editing, but KDE Live has come just leaps and bounds and is really quite good for, you know, your basic nonlinear video editing needs. So I'm quite happy about that. Because that used to be my number one. I used to be able to pull it off the top of my head. Video editing. And that's pretty much solved now. Although, of course, there's always more you could do with it. There are applications out there that, you know, you don't have a KDE swing to it. I mean, there's Inkscape, but I don't think there's really any real point in trying to reinvest into a complete recreation of what Inkscape is just to rewrite it out of GDK. I think there are, you know, some pretty big, you know, holes in our application suites in general. We do have, you know, a database application in Kexi. We do have personal finance in KMyMoney. We do have basic business accounting in Craft. So a lot of the old, you know, sticking points are gone. But we still lack things such as, you know, a replacement for, you know, something that's as easy to use as the Macromedia tools to create little media presentations. You know, export them as Flash and away you go. We really don't have anything that's really quite like that yet in the free software world, and I'd really like to see us get to that point. I'd love to, you know, eventually have an application where you can fire it up and, you know, point and click your way to a nice little open source based, you know, Plasma maybe based widget you can distribute that just, you know, works. We don't have that kind of stuff. Other than that, it's a lot of, you know, little utilities that you can find on Windows or Mac that, you know, we just don't have. And a lot of them are very, very niche, the kind of things, you know, if, you know, two clicks and I have, you know, a goofy picture frame for my family that I can then click on another button and email it to everybody. Those things come with user base. But, yeah, I mean, we're covering more and more of the basic user or general base user needs these days. So we're in a lot better place than we were. There are still some holes, but things are fairly decent.
Aaron, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You and the rest of the KDE developers are doing a fantastic job. 4.2 is great, and we look forward to 4.3.
Well, thanks for having me on, and hopefully answered a few of the questions that people had in their minds. And
oh, yeah. Keep doing it. You know, the job you guys are doing is just phenomenal. I'm loving it. And to all those naysayers, to hell with them. To hell with them. I am just thrilled with KDE4.
Brilliant. Glad we're making you happy.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Aaron.
But you don't have to leave, Aaron.
Happy.
You don't have to leave. You're more than welcome to stay on. We're going to probably touch on a few other topics before we have to close up. So it's up to you, but we thank you for your time.
Great. Yeah, I might stay on for a few more minutes, but I probably have to go in a bit. So we'll see.
Thank you. Awesome. Yes, sir, Pat.
Hey, have you guys had a chance to check out the Linux native version of the Google Chromium browser? You can install it via the Ubuntu PPA repository.
So this isn't an official image, is it?
What's that?
It's not an official image from Google?
No.
It's a build. Oh. It's a daily build that they're working on.
Yeah, but it's not officially from Google.
No.
This is
considered
Chrome,
alpha, but it's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Chromium is what the official name is.
The browser.
And, the browser. It's fast as hell. You know, but you can tell it's still very rough around the edges.
The last
kind of working version.
Yeah, the last time I used it, which was like, I thought it was like less than a week ago, when you had first brought it up. and I updated it twice, I think, since then. The tabs were not working. You could open a new tab, but you couldn't switch back to the any of the previous ones. And you say that's fixed now, huh?
Yeah, you can open up tabs. What's not working is none of the configuration stuff, like bookmarks and importing settings and that kind of thing. None of that stuff is working yet.
So you can switch between tabs now, right?
Yes.
Huh.
You can open up new tabs.
I don't think it has, like, Flash support and stuff yet, does it, or plugins or anything?
I don't think so. It's still very rough. But at least they got the ball rolling, you know?
I'll pass until it becomes official.
Shut up, Alan.
No.
Alan's happy with Safari.
No, I get Firefox on all my machines.
Well, you know, what's your opinion of I don't know if you guys have tried this, but the opinion of Chromium versus Midori. Has anybody used Midori? Because Midori is pretty blazing.
Yeah, I've used Midori.
Haven't had a chance
I haven't
to
used
pick
Chrome. Midori is pretty cool. It's still pretty buggy. I mean, last time I used it, I got a lot of crashes with it, but I like how it's nice and small. It reminds me of, you know, Firefox when Firefox was just a browser. You know, back in the early days.
Now, somebody had told me that you can get Flash working in Midori, but I'm not sure if I tried it, and I just haven't gone anywhere beyond that. I don't know. Dun, dun, dun. I have to look more into it, but it looks... I think Lord Drakenblue had said that you can get Flash working in it.
I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't even know
what... I'm just excited about Dillo 2.
Dillo... Is Dillo 2 out?
They're working on it.
Yeah,
it's getting there. It's getting there. Give it another year. It's got to. It's got to be just right.
I you know what? I
was out. It came out last October.
I know.
It's got tab browsing.
The last time I used Dillo was when I was still trying to play with Linux on the PlayStation.
Did you ever try Amaya?
No.
I believe that's the browser that the browser slash environment. It's a GUI web environment that'll web page editor that the W3C put out. I think it's called Amaya.
I've used it. I didn't think much of it.
It's interesting. Standards compliant, supposedly.
What was that? 330.
Yep.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, what's going on?
I thought Amaya was pretty cool. Have you used Chromium there, 230?
No, I haven't. I finally got Firefox to the point where I wanted it and haven't played with anything else.
I bet you I know who would love Chromium. Peter 64. He would love Chromium.
Yeah, but it would really take some convincing him to do it, though.
Maybe. Anybody use Opera?
He hates Google?
No, he doesn't hate Google. No. He just doesn't move to things quickly.
Opera, Dan? Yeah, I've used Opera before. It's pretty nice browser, Opera.
Yeah, on a regular basis, though, and I don't think that...
No, I use it in the backup.
I haven't used it in a long time.
No.
I used it for like 6 months, 3 years ago.
It would change your mind, Firefox.
I think Opera was one of the first to come out with a full 64-bit version.
It might have been. See, I just reinstalled a system and never went back to it. It's just apathy.
Is that a browser, too? Apathy?
No.
That's a state of mind, Dan.
It's an RSS reader. It just doesn't pull anything in.
Pull things in maybe once a week if it feels like
there you
it.
Go.
You turn it, you bring it up and it shuts itself off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But no, I would like to see more Chromium. It looks like it'd be a cool thing for, like, smaller form factor machines. So does Midori, though. I don't know. I'm kind of torn. It's going to be tough to replace Firefox, though. I mean, you get all the plugins with Firefox. You're blocking ads. You're blocking Flash.
Well, you know, the whole thing with Chromium is that they want to integrate all the Google apps. That's going to be the thing about it. You know, that and the App Engine, integrating that.
See, that's why I'm not moving too quickly to it. I'm trying to remove myself from the Googleverse.
How's that working for you?
It's working pretty well.
So like, what do you do? You're just not using, like, Google Docs and Google and Gmail and everything?
Yeah, about the only thing I'm using still is I'm using Google Talk as an XMPP connection and just the search. But I make sure that I'm logged out of it all the time.
And so what's your reasoning for that?
It creeps me out when one company knows way too much about me.
What are you trying to hide? What are you trying to hide?
Nothing, and I'll be damned if they find that out.
Just run Tor, man. You'll be fine.
Yeah, Google's putting that app out for you, too, Tor. Google Tor.
Speaking of Google, you hear about Android? They're going to put it on netbooks now?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Actually, there's another story about... they're supposed to put... have you guys seen the Verizon Hub?
Yeah.
What's a Verizon Hub?
Basically, it's a home phone. It's all cell-driven with a big 7-inch... Or, I don't know, it's just like a 7 or a 9-inch LCD. And it has internet
on it.
Oh, I've
seen advertisements for that tonight.
Right. T-Mobile's supposed to bring out, like, the equivalent, but with Android. Instead of whatever Verizon uses. I need to find the link for that.
Windows Embedded?
I don't know what Verizon uses. Yeah.
They have different things. I've seen Symbian phones for Verizon. I've seen Crackberries. I've seen Windows Embedded.
Yeah.
Judging by the look on the TV, it looks more like it's a Windows type thing.
Windows?
I could be wrong.
The hub?
Verizon thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But knowing Verizon is so crippled, it's not even funny.
Probably.
Yeah, the thing's probably a good device, except they break it and disable it.
Yeah, you want to send a text message like they're showing on TV. It probably costs you a dollar.
Yeah, they charge you for everything.
Oh, that's the reason I left Verizon was they charge you for every single thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You got a really nice phone with really lots of good features, but with Verizon you can only use like a third of the features.
Yeah.
The Nimble Desk Phone, NIMBLE. There, I just pasted a link in the IRC. They don't show the handset, though, but...
What's
I'm looking forward to the Android phones that are coming out, man. That's what I'm really looking forward to. There's a bunch of them that are about to come out.
Yep.
Yeah, the G2. I think the G2 is a rebranded Huawei phone.
No. That's the G3.
No?
The G3
is Huawei.
Yeah, the G2 is going to be an HTC phone with no keyboard.
Samsung is supposedly coming out with like two or three different phones.
Look at that. Yeah. There's a big-ass analog clock right there on the phone.
Well, all that's right. What you're all about, Dan.
Already for you.
And do you know what? I wish you could make it a little bit... It's like the sun hovering over that little... Well, I don't know. It looks like a lake or a bay.
Yeah, the Huawei is officially the G3 on T-Mobile.
Well, it's good to see there's finally some, you know, new phones coming out besides the G1.
Yeah. I mean, I love my G1. And I finally got to use a 3G when I was in D.C. From Saturday to today. And the 3G just sucks the battery down like nothing flat. It's
bad.
Yeah,
but you can do all you can get to use all those apps in there really fast.
They are. Like the mapping and all that. I mean, it was really nice.
Did you use the barcode scanner where you go into a store, you scan the barcode, and it'll tell you where the nearest store is that's cheaper?
Well, since I was at National Harbor, there was, like, no stores there. And the ones that were there were freaking expensive. So it's like I didn't even bother.
Speaking of Linux-based phones, man, did you guys hear about OpenMoCo? It's pretty
dead.
It sucks.
Yeah, it's really disappointing.
You couldn't see that coming a mile away.
I was just thinking, you know, they've been really quiet. I wonder what's up with them.
I mean, it's sad to see that, you know, it's just like, I don't know. They seem to, they had like such a strong push out of the gate, and then it just slowly, you just kept dying. Kind of like Palm's OS. It just, I don't know. I mean, they actually did put out a product, but it didn't work right.
It needed
well, there were issues with
work,
the battery, and there was also issues with, there was like noise. They were getting buzzing noise.
It's GPRS only on the data, which is
no 3G.
Like
you gotta have 3G.
Yes. It was like that's like going back to dial up, which is like no way am I gonna use that when I'm out and about. No way.
Yeah, they laid off like I think most of the people working on it. And they pretty much said they're not going to do any more development, paid development on it. They fired like the kernel developer that was working specifically for the hardware. It's really sad, really disappointing. You know, when they first announced it, it just seemed so promising. And then the fact I think that didn't help was like they kept switching the toolkit they were using. I mean, you got to decide what you're going to go with, and you got to stick with it. You know.
That's why I always use Mono for everything. Right, 330?
That's right. It'll run on anything.
Yeah.
Well, the Palm Pre looks like a nice device. That's another one. If they don't succeed with that, man, Palm is dead in the water if they don't do anything.
It's got to be a success right out of the gate or Palm's
done. Yeah, they're done if they don't. You know, the videos and stuff looks real nice. It looks like a real nice nice little phone. Some nice apps.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be coming out pretty soon, right? May, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
What's coming out in May?
The Palm Pre.
Oh. Whatever happened to the Zarias?
They're done. They went Japan only for a while. And came out with some really compelling devices. Like they had some with like a mini laptop where you can like flip the screen over the keyboard. You know, just like a little tiny like 4-inch tablet. And they were really, really popular in Japan. But then even in Japan they kind of fell by the wayside.
Smartphones took over.
There you go. Well, that's it. I mean, if it's not doesn't have a cell radio of some sort, it's history.
Yeah, that's right. The Zarius wasn't a phone, was it?
Nope, PDA.
That's right.
Really nice one. It had a 4-gig micro drive on it. And then I think they brought one out with a 6-gig one.
What are they going to upgrade? Oh, go ahead.
I say the one nice thing about the Zarius was that it actually used X for its display, which means you could run, you know, you can export any X application to, you know, the Zarya's display, so it can run anything. I mean, you can run anything that you can run on a desktop, you can run on the Zarya's. It just wasn't very useful with only 240 by 220.
If Palm has any brains, they'll have an emulator so that you'll be able to run all the old Palm applications.
They already do.
Yes. Yeah, it's supposed to have
they got to do that.
Yep.
Hell, if you want one, you can get one on eBay for $45.
A Palm or an emulator?
And then a Sharp Zorus.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Functioning? Still working?
For
$45?
Which one?
SL5600.
Well, that's like the one... Okay.
Buy it now, $45.
There's no official support from Sharp.
It's from Canada.
Right.
How old is that thing?
10 years old now.
Yeah, something like that.
That's pretty old.
They were coming out when we were still going to Linux World in New York.
Yeah, Faber had one.
I think it's a strong arm 206. It's like the first processor that was in the iPack when Compaq still made it.
Oh yeah, I remember the iPack. Never had one of those either. They're pretty popular.
I had one. I liked it. But
you
Windows Mobile
Linux
sucked. Yeah, Windows Mobile sucked bad.
Has Windows Mobile gotten any better?
Nope. It still has all the same memory management issues that it's had that I used. See, when I had an iPac 5555, which is, that was the top-end iPac before they kind of fell by the wayside, and most Windows mobile phones I've seen still have the exact same issues today that they did back then with memory management and other things.
Now, if you got $500, you can get the clamshell one.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Complete all in Japanese, so you gotta dissect it yourself. But
you can load
$500, and it can be yours.
You can load. There is other ROM images that you can load on there that would put it into English, and the keyboard is English too.
Yeah.
People want to know, Gorkon, are you on Windows Mobile right now?
No, I'm using my 1000HE running Jaunty. It's just gorgeous. I love it.
How are you connecting in? You using a SIP client?
Yep, IKEA.
That explains it.
Yep.
How fast is your internet connection?
It drops a little bit here and there.
It gets a little clippy, distorted. Sounds like you're dropping packets.
Know, speaking of internet connections, I got a really brief rant. I'm a Time Warner cable subscriber, and Time announced that they are going to have tiered web pricing, which is pissing me off. They're
40 gigabyte
language
level. Well, they're going to have 5, 10, 20, and 40 gigabyte levels between like $30 and $55 a month. And then they're going to charge like, what is it, $1 per gigabyte that you go over your plan, your whatever plan
right.
You're on.
40 gigabytes is nothing.
All that this is a play by them to make more money off of people, to bleed people. That's all this is. It's
no.
Pure
No, they want you to use their cable subscription to watch your TV rather than use Hulu and Netflix.
Yeah,
they want to watch streaming.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think it's a lot
ridiculous.
More
I mean,
they want you to stay on their stuff.
You know, if you download a couple of ISOs or something,
yep.
I mean, I'm going to
spend... Or if you're backing
up
to S3.
I don't know how much.
Yeah.
The thing is, you could kill 40 gigs a month and just, you know...
One day, man.
To the web. Yeah.
As much as I hate to say it, I may have to switch to, you know, DSL or something.
I can't. I'm too far
from... A lot of people don't have a choice, man.
Yeah. I'm too far from the central office.
Monopolies in certain areas.
Gorkon, just move your cardboard box closer to the central office.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and you know, there's like this, there's a town that's like maybe 45 minutes or an hour away from where I live called Wilson, North Carolina, and they have municipal high-speed internet access, and it's awesome. And I wish they had that here, but it's like really high, bandwidth and pretty cheap price and stuff. Let me see if I can find something about that. It's called Greenlight.
Who's doing Darth Vader here?
Yeah,
that's Joel, isn't it?
Yeah,
Luke, I'm your father.
Yeah. Had the mic sitting like right in front of my nose.
The force is strong with this one.
Yeah.
Muni internet connection is nice. My DSL provider is run by the municipal power company, and they let me run servers on it, and I get a just on the cheap $30 a month one. I've got a static IP and everything else. My throughput sucks, but, yeah.
Yeah, this Greenlight service in Wilson is supposed to be really good for a muni service, and God, I wish we had something like that here, because this Time Warner thing is just really, it's pretty outrageous.
Dude, muni internet would be a reason to move.
For some, not me. I pretty much
Time Warner has, I think, like a monopoly of most of New York City. You know, one of the biggest cities in the world, and they basically have complete control over, you know, cable TV and internet. They're monopolies, the cable companies, pretty much.
Oh, they are. They're slightly regulated monopolies.
Well, and even when there is competition in some areas, it depends on, like if you live in an apartment complex, the apartment complex negotiates and gets Time Warner or whoever the company it is in there, and that's the only choice you have.
That's not only apartment complexes. That's actually housing developments tend to do that as well.
Absolutely. When we first moved into this house, there was one cable company, and then for like 2-3 years. We didn't have a choice.
Yeah, because they
the other company.
Yeah,
then.
When they first put it up, they were the ones that paid to put the lines down. So,
right,
they got exclusive rights in there for so many years. Well, we got to play us out, Dan. It's 10:30.
Listen, it looks like Alan cutting us off. We got a good conversation going. He's gonna kill it.
I'm sorry. I got to go. I'm tired.
You gotta go watch Tim McGraw videos on YouTube.
No, the wife will be pushing me out soon so she can do that, and I can go to bed quietly. Without her bugging me.
On his MacBook.
Yep, I'm on the MacBook. But I'm running Linux on it, so it's okay. Well, I guess
you need to help Link how to figure out how to do that, Alan.
Yeah. Link with his new unibody MacBook.
He sends me fancy ones.
He sends me desktop pictures of his OS X machine, like screenshots.
You should send him a picture of all the money you saved by not buying one.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe he can start running KDE on OS X.
There you go.
It would be an
improvement. No, not Link. No. He hates freedom.
No, go out and buy 3 netbooks and take a picture of them and say, see, I have 3 computers to your 1.
Dun, 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 dun. Speaking of 3 computers to your 1, I guess I should just make a brief mention that we now have everything over onto the server, the new server. We have 3 virtual machines running on there. One is the Asterisk on a Slackware current. No, it's 12.2, I'm sorry. We have the server that's moved over on a Slackware system and a virtual machine, and also a Debian virtual machine running our butt for streaming.
That nice
butt is the Icecast client.
Yep, it's working extremely well. I got a StarTech USB sound card, which plugged right into the USB and recognized by the server itself is running CentOS, is recognized right off the bat. I just told VMware to allow the Debian virtual machine to use it. Works perfectly. I VNC in to the Debian system to run, but because it is a GUI application. Can you run butt
and
command
it's a nice
run?
Butt.
Yeah.
It is fine. I'm not sure if you can do a command line.
I'm wondering about
but
that.
But it looks so good in that GUI, you know?
Well, it does. It does. So I thank all the listeners who donated. And
yes, thank you.
But yeah, I was surprised. It's wild that this little sound StarTech sound card was like $14, and it's about the size, maybe a little thicker than your standard USB Wi-Fi card. It almost looks like a little thicker than one of the USB. What the hell do they call these things? The adapter that you could just slide a SD card into and plug it into a system so you can read it. A card reader. And that's all it is.
Card reader writer.
Yeah. It has 2 inputs. I mean, it has an input and an output, one for the mic, one for the headphones. And it works great. It's just amazing.
That's what I used when we were at Ohio Linux Fest last time. I had my laptop with an external USB card. Streaming using the butt client, and it worked great.
So it's some good stuff. But
you're running a backup recording with the butt, Dan?
I could be, but I didn't. Not yet. I should have. I didn't want to tax the system. I probably wouldn't have taxed
it
the system, but
it makes a good quality recording.
So I will probably look into doing that next time. I didn't want to do too many things at once.
Yeah, baby steps.
Yep.
Seems to be holding up pretty well, man. The Asterisk still sounds good.
It's going. It's making me happy. I'm not happy with, and this isn't an issue with the system I have running on, but for some reason GSM codec sounds like crap. And I don't know why.
Well, we're running SIP, so we don't care about GSM.
But yeah, but still, the client defaults to a lot of them default to GSM. And, I don't know. We shall see.
Hey, guys, I got to jump off here.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
You enjoy... You're going on a business trip now?
Yeah. For a couple of days.
You going to be away from the family? Wait a minute. It's a holiday this week. You going to be home for the holiday?
I got to work on the... I'll be home by Saturday morning.
All right.
I'll be home for the holidays.
Speaking of holidays,
you guys have a good guys have a good week. I'll catch you all next time.
Yep.
Happy all right. Easter.
Have a good one.
All right, guys.
So, Dave, what were you going to say there? You know that we're not going to have a Linux Cranks this week because of the holiday, right?
Really?
Yeah.
You should have told him. He would have gone on.
Celebrate Easter. Celebrate Joey Chocolate Candy Day.
Well, that's a bummer.
I always call it Rabbit's Crapping Eggs Day.
Yeah, yeah. Get your peeps today.
I'm sorry I missed last week.
That's cool.
I was at a... I had to spearhead a bachelor party.
That's what you call it. You were just drunk.
No, well, actually, you know, that's not far from the truth.
Well, yes, I was.
Belligerent.
We went paintballing all day. And then out for food and drink afterwards, and by the time I got home, I was just pretty wiped out. So,
yeah, go-go bars can do that to you.
No, there was no go-go bars. Yeah,
is that what they're calling
ping pong ball trick?
Paintball. Yeah, paintball.
Is it paintball now?
Yeah, it's called go-go paint.
Yeah.
You shoot instead of tipping, you shoot them with paintballs. Actually, that would be pretty damn painful. That would be
pretty painful. Like hell.
Man, because you get hit,
pretty
man.
Pretty fun, though.
Man, I got hit so many times. I got hit in the head, man. One time, my head was ringing afterwards. I was like, ow, that hurt. And speedball.
Speedball's cool.
No, not that kind of speedball.
Anyways, I gotta get going.
All right, anything else? I got two songs for us tonight. One is a KDE song called The Best Song Ever.
The Q4 Dance.
Would you like to know?
And the other one is a free BSD song, Song 45, because trolls wanted to hear it. And the whole
time, love the BSD.
Damn laptop plugged in. I shouldn't have had it plugged in. So unless you gentlemen have anything else to say, I will play us out.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Remember, no more Flourish. Do we have a guest for next week?
Yes, we do. We have famous Inkscape developer, Mental Guy.
Oh. Yeah.
That should be a good one.
Cool.
Yeah, Inkscape is great. Get Heathenex on. He'll like that. Anyway, here we go. Thank you very much. And this is it.
Good night. Good
night, everybody.
Night, night.
This is Festival on 4.9, because it owns like C99 KDE 4.1, owns Q, it is so nice and blue. Linux FTWBSD is cool, as well Windows is not bad, either hahaha JK. Wormix is one of the best games ever, and SPL is one of the best libraries ever, and OpenWL is really sick. UT is pretty good, GTK is good for C widgets, is decent to Windows, API makes me pee, or something. Ubuntu is really easy to use, Linux Mint might even be better, maybe. Gentoo is can be hard to use though, OMG you are a noob. Lol at xkcdgcc is so sweet, I am really bad at thinking of lyrics, so error, disk is full error, invalid passcode error, unauthorized user error, KDE crash, handler crashing, KDE crash, handler crashing, KDE crash, handler crashing. Zero assembly IDE, qua vitamus elvis, space station fetus lib desolate brass, late the night 3D engines, ultimate Pokemon purple Super Mario 68K, Doom 89 Compra 83 Robot War, Sonic Dars CS and Voltana Grand Source, Codermetroid Dance Dance Revolution ... software.
Southeast Linux Fest is a community event for anyone who wants to learn more about Linux and free and open source software. It is part educational conference and part social gathering. Like Linux itself, it is shared with the attendees of all skill levels to communicate tips and ideas and to benefit all who use Linux and free and open source software. The Linux Fest is a place to learn, to make new friends, to network with new business partners, and most importantly, to have fun. Come join us for the first annual Southeast Linux Fest on June 13th, 2009 in Clemson, South Carolina. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the guests, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are licking bad. For the show, then go direct to dlngs.org. And the IC channel is a linuxthink.net bound tech show. Just sit right there, go together, just about to begin.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint you a fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Shut up. It's over.
Yeah. Oh, just to mention, tomorrow night, Free Linux Helpline at 9. What time is it at? 9 o'clock?
That's it. Let me look
it up. 8 o'clock? Is it 9 o'clock Central? No, wait, 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern? I believe I'm going to be on there with C4. Shuffle, 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 ruffle, ruffle, ruffle.
Are you going to do commercials, Dan, in between the segments?
I don't know. Not on the Free Linux Helpline. There's no commercials on there.
You need commercials.
It's another 3:30 production.
That is a CyberCod production that he is graceful enough to have me on.
Yeah, well, that, okay, I'm sorry. A CyberCod production that 3:30 whores himself out to.
If you notice, I'm smart that way. I'm not on a single show that I've ever started. I make everyone else do the legwork.
Wait, who started Linux Cranks?
Dude, all that stuff is Monster B, man.
Oh. Yeah.
He does all the heavy lifting.
I'm going to miss Monster B. I haven't spoken to him in, like, over a week now. Now I got to wait another week. To get my Asian fix. That means I won't be hearing Pat complain about lesbians again. At Walmart.
I'd be more on that show more often if you guys did it like at a normal hour.
It is a normal hour.
No kidding.
For everyone.
Yeah, if you don't have any kids.
Yeah.
Or if you're not in the U.S. Say, Dan, it's 7:45 Eastern.
Oh, 7:45. 7:45?
Yeah.
Like, why can't you start it at, like, 7:30 or 8? Why 7:45?
Let's say it's actually 8 o'clock, but the talk show room opens at 7:45.
Oh, all right. I'll show up at 8:15.
Like I did tonight. Sorry about that, guys.
That's no problem.
So I was trying to walk as fast as I could my way home, and I was stopped by dogs.
That's freelinuxhelpline.net anyway. So yeah. Wait, your own dogs?
No. For some reason, people in my neighborhood just let their dogs out and let them run. Dude, like, 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago,
You got attacked by a pit bull?
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Like, viciously attacked, or he came up to lick you?
People get dogs, and they're too freaking lazy to walk them, man. That pisses me off.
I got a neighbor who's got 4 dogs, and claims she can't keep them in the freaking yard.
Yeah, they just open the door and let it out the front door.
Yep.
And they wonder when their dog gets hit by a car. Oh my God, oh no.
Or when their dog jumps through a hedge and bites somebody on the arm.
You got bitten on the arm?
Yeah, it attacked the mailman.
Well, did you cry?
It grabbed my sweatshirt. And I just kind of turned around and started screaming at it like I yell at my dogs. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal. scared the crap out of me. Like, I wasn't scared until afterwards, though.
Yeah, because you think that's a pit bull. If he really wanted to, he could have screwed you up.
Yeah, I know.
They're vicious.
Any dog can be vicious.
True.
Yeah, but when a pit bull bites you, man, it doesn't let go.
No.
So, 330, if the dogs came and crapped in your yard, how would you know?
Wouldn't you like
because
to know?
My dogs would try to eat it?
No.
There you go.
So if they're out there in the yard eating, you know that somebody's been doing...
Yep.
Why is it when dogs eat their own poop, man? That's weird.
Well, say they eat other dogs' poop, and they eat cat poop, and... Dogs are nasty.
And if you're Dan, you get to see the cat poop that the dog ate in his bed.
Our current dog does not eat cat poop, which is really nice.
It doesn't get into bed with you with the cat poop in its mouth.
No. Hell.
Gives him a big fat kid.
Our cat takes poops bigger than our current dog, so.
Let's say I've got a dog that takes poops bigger than some of my cats.
Is that the same Bernard?
Yeah.
Like,
it's like horse crap, man. It's massive.
Bigger than like small children.
Yeah.
So you are all your cats indoor cats?
Yeah.
So where do all these animals like go? 12 cats, 4 dogs.
Dude,
where do they all go?
Dude, the cats, you never see more than 4 of them at a time.
How many rooms you have in your house?
2 bedrooms. Total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 rooms.
So you got 2 bedrooms. You probably have a living room, a dining room, a kitchen.
And 2 inches of crap.
A bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
What are the other 2 rooms?
All right, so I miscounted.
Do you have a basement?
No, I've got a root cellar.
Do the animals go down there?
No, it's where all the mice and everything hide since they can't get up here anymore. That root cellar is my plan to live through the zombie apocalypse.
What, snacking on your animals?
Dude, because you can't get to it unless you go through a trap door in a closet. Yeah, that's how I'm surviving the zombie apocalypse. Use the little vent area for, you know, for shooting out of. It'll work out nice.
Well, there you go.
It all depends on, like, are they slow-moving zombies or the fast ones?
Just hope nothing's buried down there. You'll be huddled up, hiding, and the next thing you know, a hand pops through the ground.
That would suck. Although there is a well down there, so I could just push it down the well.
Yeah, but then that's your water supply.
I wouldn't drink that water anyway. It's scary looking, man.
Damn.
Thing is, I'm on the side of the river that has the, where the sewers back up into the river. So yeah, I ain't drinking that. The city just got fined by the EPA, so they're fixing it. So in about 10 years, that well will be fine to drink out of.
Correct myself. Maybe something will come crawling out of that well instead of the ground.
It's been eating feces.
Been living off of it for the last 20 years.
Alligator comes up into his house.
It comes up burping. It looks like shop rat.
All red face.
Hey guys. That's not right. You can sing it with the snack machine's towel.
There you go.
Anyway, have a say good night, guys.
I'm gonna wrap this up too and
take care.
Put it out to pasture.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm really dropping the ball on the ear at Doba here. What am I doing?
Hey, you really are.
I'm too lazy to go get
Wouldn't
the TV.
Would you like to know?
I know. I'll pick it up again next week. It's year Adoba. Didn't say what year. All right.
You just gotta play one Doba song every month. And it's the year of Doba.
That's true. I think it's been two episodes I haven't played
what
one.
What the hell? What the hell was that?
That what? Was one of mine.
Oh. Something just pissed.
Yeah, they're fighting over food.
I'm glad I only have one. Ugh.
Yeah, that's how mine started out, but the other two were rescues.
Yeah.
It was either me or the pound, so...
Aww. Puppy go coochoo poo. Yeah, I don't think I've ever bought a dog from, or gotten a dog from anywhere that wasn't some kind of rescue, or a cat for that matter.
Yep. That's, wow, mine was that too. A friend of mine, his dog had three pups, and he said, come get one of these or they're going to the pound. She didn't want nothing to do with me when I came home, though.
The dog or your wife?
Well,
or both?
Kind of, well, no. The wife was kind of glad to see me, so. And I know my son was. He's like, what'd you get me? I'm like, well, can I go somewhere? I have to get you something?
Like it's I got you a punch in the head.
Yeah, really. That's true, though. When you go on trips, you gotta get something for your kid. You know. Like, Dan, did you get anything for Columbus for your kids? Hard time.
Yeah, no.
So you got some Linux effect swag.
Actually, no. You know what? When I came home, I stopped on the way and picked up something up at the drugstore. they don't want any. They want toys and crap, you know.
You just gotta pick them up some weird shit. Yeah, you know, stuff you don't have in town.
Yeah.
So my dad always did just like the weirdest thing you could ever imagine.
Yep. Like some weird soda pop that they don't have at home.
Or he'd bring stuff home that pissed my mom off, like whoopee cushions and...
Yep.
My brother actually popped a whoopee cushion one time.
Holy shit, how did he do that?
Well, he blew it up, sat in the middle of the room and ran in and did like a flying butt drop on it. And when he did, he landed on the part where the air comes out, so it popped on his ass. He had this big welt on him for like 2 weeks.
Oh.
My dad was crying. He was laughing so hard.
You probably were, too.
Oh, God, yeah. This is the same brother that ran into a sliding glass door thinking it was open, like comes barreling through the house. And just takes this, like, head-first leap, like he's going to leap through it or something. Just, pow!
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
What's he do now?
He's going to Ball State. He's a sports marketing major.
Oh.
Ball State.
Oh, there you go.
Ball State. That's funny.
Alright, well, because I've been convinced to do it, we will commence with the week of Doba, year of Doba, with a Doba song. Crap, it's 10 minutes long. Interplay. Intervention. Interplay Intervention is what it's called. It's for Peter 64. So, gentlemen, I'm going to play this out. Thank you, and I'll probably talk to you tomorrow at 3:30.
Yep, take it easy, man.
Thank you, Joel. Have a good one.
Yep.
I don't think Aaron's still on, but if he was, I'd say thank you.
Good night, guys.
Is that Aaron?
No, sure is.
Oh. Have you been on the whole time?
Three quarters of the show.
Oh. Well. Good night. Have a good one.
Later.
So long, man. Bye. There you go, your Doba Pick of the Week. We'll be right back. Hope you enjoyed it. Bye bye.
Sounds pretty good over here.
So far, so good.
We'll see how it holds up. Everyone's bailing tonight, man. Gorkon's coming in.
Gorkon's coming in?
I don't know. He might. He says he's coming in from the airport. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Does it sound all right tonight?
I think it sounds great.
Okay, cool. Back on Twinkle.
Actually, you sound like you're mumbling.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. The keyboard wasn't working for me, so...
No, it's not sounding that good, actually.
All right. I'll have to figure out what to do here.
You don't use the phone anymore?
No, not in a while. I've actually been using this a lot.
That's what I'm using. I think it sounds okay. How do I sound?
You sound all
right. You sound fine.
I've just been lazy and not hooking up the microphone, so... There's a laptop right here. I want to see if I can get a key to work in again.
Oh, it's so weird that I don't have to switch between different systems.
Yeah. So you have another virtual machine that you're streaming from?
Yeah.
You use it as the client?
Yeah.
And
well, I replaced
like
the Dynabolic with the Debian running butt.
Awesome, man. How do you like the butt?
No, I like it.
It's sweet, isn't it?
It is.
And that's a pretty up-to-date application. I think the last release I had was in December, so... Unlike the streaming application that's in Dynabolic, that Muse, I tried getting that thing working, man. Couldn't get it to work right. There was some kind of a bug in it.
Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
Not get 3:30 to come on. He hasn't been on in a while.
Why is there a fat Mexican guy on my desktop? Well, it's not JZA.
I can't help you.
Actually, JZA is not really fat, so.
I haven't seen the guy in person, so.
Is that me in the water? Where's Aaron?
He was in the RC. I guess he had something to do before jumping in. He asked me what time we're going to start.
I thought I had Twinkle fixed.
Oh, there's Gorkon.
If the stream is up, how come we only have one listener? Oh, wait, I'm on the wrong... I keep refreshing the wrong one. 14. here's a question I have for you regarding butt. If I want to stream to another server, like BinRev, I have it set up. I have it set up. I think I put the wrong password in. Can I do multiple servers?
I think you can.
Well, I do, but when I... No, that's not the right password. Hello? Dead air.
How are you liking Chauncey, Dan?
I like it. I like it a lot, actually.
I have a little bit of an issue with certain games, like when you first start playing them, the sound is like all crackly, but eventually it clears up.
It's obviously not working at all.
What do you mean it's not working now at all? Turn yourself up. What did he do? Hello?
I have no idea.
Hello. Aaron here.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm kicking this guy. He's not supposed to be on yet. How you doing, Aaron?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Yeah, it's finally pretending to be spring here, which is nice.
You still living in Calgary?
Yeah, at the moment.
Hold on a second, I'm trying to get my GNOME working properly. Actually, I'm not running GNOME anymore. Oh, no, wait, I have it on this machine. Are you running GNOME, Aaron?
Always.
I knew it.
Yeah.
GNOME with Pulse Audio.
My favorite combination.
What time is it? Is it showtime? Boy, it's 4 minutes. We invited all... Alan!
All right. That worked better.
Yeah, you said it okay before you hung up before. We could actually hear you. Fine.
Okay. Well, we're on Ikigo this time, so.
Sounds a lot better.
Yeah, actually, for some reason, the sun settings weren't on. I don't know why they worked last week. But when I looked under preferences, there were none. And so I was like, okay, I had to put that in there. And that seems to work. Very nice, then.
Much
wow, this is great. I mean, we got everything running off of one server, running three virtual servers. It's beautiful.
That's because you have a real server now.
And, well, the other one was a real server. It was only like 8 or 9 years old, but it was still a real server. And after tonight, if everything goes smoothly, I'm taking it all down, all the other stuff down.
Actually, I really don't hear the jet engine back there tonight. I hear a little bit of a hissing noise. I don't know if that's on my end or what.
Yeah, I can hear the hissing noise as well.
Tell me if you hear the hissing noise now.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Because
that would probably be my jet engines.
Oh.
That you hear in the background.
It doesn't sound the same this week.
It's because the one knows it's going down. It's trying to be nice. I'm putting it out the pasture soon.
Turn off all the fans and just let it run and catch fire.
Yeah. No, it'll burn down my house.
We'll do it outside. Like, you know,
it's going to be like that scene from Office Space with the fax machine they all hate.
When it gets burning a little bit, you get the video of you out there with a couple of hot dogs over top of it.
You know what? The server has been faithful to me for like 12 years now. Because it used to be our old work server. So.
And that would be fitting.
Who just jumped in?
Me.
Who's me?
Hey, Gorkon, how you doing?
What'd that do?
I thought you weren't coming in today.
I changed my mind.
Turn yourself up. How come you've been on this show for 3 weeks now, and we can barely hear you. Aaron comes on, not a problem. Nothing, no problem with his audio. Like, he does this every single night. It sounds beautiful. And you, ooh. Aaron sounds beautiful. I'm not talking to you, Joel.
You are?
Yeah, I'm talking to you right now. No, you don't sound beautiful.
Hold on.
All right. We're going to have some really good stuff tonight.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Is that better?
That's, yeah.
Much better.
Now mute yourself because your family's yelling in the background.
No, they're not.
Aaron, it's going to be Alan, Pat, Joel, and myself tonight, I think. Along with you. Okay?
Sounds good. Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. What part of the country are you in?
Me? Yeah. Calgary.
Yeah, Calgary, I was going to say. What's the temperature like up there now?
It was +6 today, and
Ooh.
Sunny, which was nice.
Oasty.
We've had a bizarrely long winter here. I mean, it was up until last week, we're still getting snow every day. So.
Now, is that +6 Celsius?
We had snow this morning here.
Celsius, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so that's about, what, 40, 50? Wait, I got a Celsius to Fahrenheit converter. Hold on.
Yeah, it's 12 degrees above freezing in Fahrenheit.
It's like 45.
Yeah.
It's been chilly around
close.
Here, actually. We've had, like, flurries the last couple of days. It's been quite cold. It, like, warmed up, like, a couple weeks back, and then now it's, like, chilly again.
I had to take my bike to the shop tonight. It froze my butt off.
Dun, 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 dun. 42.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
For 6? No, I don't think that's that much.
Yeah, it is. I just did it on the converter. You calling my converter a liar?
No, but that don't sound right.
Well, do your math again, pal. All right, I'm going to plug in the music. Aaron, we're going to play a few promos before the show. Did Flourish happen yet? Anybody? Flourish? Or is that at the end of the month? No. And COS is when? April 17th.
Yeah,
I remember. No, that's up by this course, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Finally a show I don't have to get on an airplane for.
There you go. That's like you can open up your back door and walk right to it, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
No, it's good. Calgary's not that big. It's like, what, a pub and a gas station and a few houses, right?
Yeah, and a couple of horses outside.
Uh-huh. And a trough.
Yeah. And an oil well.
And a tumbleweed frozen to the ground.
There you go. That pretty much sums it up.
All right. Is it time? Wait, let me...
I believe
time
it's time.
It's about
time.
That time, yeah.
Wait, let me just see if I can do this connecting to BinRev. Why won't it let me connect to BinRev with butt?
Butt.
Butt. Right, let me kick the show.
What is
kick butt?
Butt is an Icecast streaming client. It's
okay.
An acronym. It stands for Broadcasting Using This Tool. That's what I used when we were streaming from IHOL Linux Fest back in the fall.
Cool. All right. I remember you saying that now that you said that there, but when I asked the question, I just had no clue.
All right, well, whatever. We're in one place. People can find us. Let's get the show going.
Let's do it.
We got 32 listeners. All right. I'm going to... Everything looks good. I'm going to start the